Picture this, please. A calming breeze, warm, golden light. In the distance, kipping turns dive seaward, then dart toward the sun. Your feet are pointed toward water, where it comes gently rolling in wave upon wave. This is exactly what the scholarly publishing business isn't like in 2015. Much the same as the weather outside here in Frankfurt, our business is often a mixed bag at best, and very far from a day at the beach. Where it comes to open access, publishers must juggle myriad compliance and reporting responsibilities to maintain a robust and transparent open access program. VAT compliance, funder compliance, institutional reporting are the source of many sleepless nights for publishers. But does it have to be that way? Hopefully not, as many have realized that robust compliance and reporting are important drivers in establishing strong institutional and funder relationships. And as we've heard, those relationships are more and more important. We come now to the portion of our morning program I think of fondly as our wonk panel, and I mean that as very much a compliment. So before we get started with our discussion, let me introduce people. I'll start on the far end to my left, Richard Wynn. Richard, welcome. Richard is Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Aries Systems Corporation. He has 30 years' experience in the software and information industry in Europe and the United States. He joined Aries in 1999 and has played a leading role in the successful development of Editorial Manager, an online peer review system deployed to more than 6,500 scholarly journals. And immediately to my left, on my gauche, is Agnès Henri. Agnès, bonjour, welcome. Agnès comes to us from Paris, where she is Publishing Director for EDP Sciences. She joined EDP Sciences in 1995 after earning a PhD in materials at the French aerospace lab, Onera, and so very much a researcher as well as a publisher. She now leads the publishing department at EDP Sciences, and her role is to help scientific communities disseminate their content around the world. She has a deep knowledge of the industry with a 360-degree view of the marketplace. To my right immediately is Randy Petway. Randy, welcome. Randy is Executive Vice President for Global Strategy, Global Product Strategy at Publishing Technology. He leads development of Publishing Technology's products Advance, Pub2Web, and Ingenta Connect. Prior to the merger between Vista and Ingenta to form Publishing Technology, Randy held several management-level positions at Vista. He has more than 15 years of industry experience working with some of the world's leading trade, academic, and educational publishers. And very finally, on the far right, Josh Dahl. Josh, welcome. Josh is head of publishing and associations for Thomson Reuters, where he's responsible for advancing their product strategy in association, working with association customers and publishers. Prior to that, he was director of product management for Scholar One, responsible for identifying, developing, and implementing the Scholar One product roadmap. And, you know, we are speaking today about compliance and reporting for open access. And open access for EDP, Agnès, is still very much a new approach to publishing. EDP has been around for nearly 100 years, the publishers of Madame Curie, among many, many other distinguished researchers. And EDP, existing outside of what we normally think of as the center of open access in the UK, you have a perspective from Europe. Why did EDP choose to develop an open access program, and particularly to create these exclusively open access journals, including or under the EDP Open program? Tell us briefly about the decision and how you came to it.
So we really think that the open access is the future. So at the beginning, let's say 10 years ago, we already worked with researchers to have the best solution for green open access. And when we began to hear about gold open access, we think it's really a good opportunity to work with researchers to have some journals, to convert some journals to open access, or to create some journals and give them much more visibility. Because as a medium publisher, it's always more difficult to work with subscription if you compare to big deals what that can offer a big publisher. We are smaller, so it's difficult to sell and to give more visibility to the contents. And open access is really the possibility to give our journals and the journal of our shareholder the wide visibility they need to live.
Right. And we heard from Linda Kennaway about the importance of that visibility, of sort of measuring that impact. And for institutions particularly, that's important. They are often the funders, in many cases, for APCs, the article processing charges. What's your thinking regarding working with the institutions and as a way to serve those end customers, the authors?
It's really the good way to promote their brand. Working with them in two different way. Either they already have the journals, and so we bring them all the tools to be in open access to give their journals their brand of the visibility. Either we work also with researchers, and often the researchers do not exactly understand what is green, what is gold. They made a mix of that. So we really are here to advise them what is the best solution for their paper and which journals is best suitable for them.
Right. Well, it's difficult on researchers today in Europe, particularly where there are increasing numbers of mandates and confusing signals around gold and green and so forth. And the researchers at the universities are probably doubly confused because they're getting messages from their superiors telling them to do certain things.
Yes, they are very lost. We have an example very funny, let's say, because I speak with a researcher. He wanted to create a journal, and he told me, oh yes, I want to create a journal, but I want to create a green journal. So it means that he doesn't understand what really is the open access. So I say that the first wave is to hear about open access, but now it's the second wave is to really have the researcher understand what is really open access, what is the difference between green and gold, and how they can be compliant with what their institution asks.
Right. Well, Josh Dell, researchers aren't the only ones confused. I think if you're confused, you're beginning to understand the problem when it comes to open access. And it complicates the workflow throughout. And I think your idea of all of this is that it's not just about the complications around processing the article fee itself, but the rest that comes with it. I mean, I think this is why this is the next wave. The first wave was understanding that there was that e-commerce became necessary in publishing in a way it hadn't before. This next wave is bringing to us a realization that data and the underlying information of the article is critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we've seen with many of the publishers we work with, is making sure that they've got clean data early on in the process, spending more time cleaning the data so that it moves through the workflow, so that it's easier to do that sort of reporting at the end of the process through production. So from the publisher's perspective, there's much more of a focus. You know, Crossref, the FundRef initiative, certainly helps with some of the cleansing of data, some of the accurate reporting early in the process. But there's still a lot of extra work involved for the publisher to make sure that it's truly clean and it can be reported back to a specific funder. And then on the back end of that as well is the funders, how do they get access to that data? How can they make sure that they can track impact, if you're talking about publication as one measure of impact? How do they get access to that? So I think there's a lot of additional complications aside from just how do we manage payments for a workflow from an author.
Right. So in that complicated world, how are we going to get to a situation where things aren't maybe, they won't be ever simple, but they'll be simplified? What's going to be necessary to drive us in that direction?
I mean, I think things that ORCID is doing, things that FundRef and CrossRef and FundRef are doing, standardization, institutional standardization, Ringgold's one example of that. I think that's one really important thing, is to adopt standards, adopt and promote not only at the beginning, but also throughout the process. And so I think that's really going to be one of the major breakthroughs to help at least create the links, because that's the part that's missing, is you've got to go through, you know, hundreds of different names of institutions or funders and try and disambiguate that and tie it together. I think that makes it a lot more difficult, whereas if you have standards that you adopt from the beginning and use throughout the workflow, it can really help to streamline that process.
And standards are going to have to be implemented by all the various players in that workflow, the institutions, the authors themselves, Orchid IDs, as you mentioned, the publishers, and the funders, too, have to support all that. It has to be a joint effort.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is not just a publisher-specific endeavor. This is the entire ecosystem has to jump onto and support these standards and adopt them.
Well, let me ask you a tough question with maybe some of your publishers in the room. How well are publishers doing with that?
I mean, I think there's definitely in the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a lot more interest in doing it. I think there are still some complications, some concerns about additional burdens on authors, on researchers, and an already complicated and time-consuming process that they have to go through to get to the point of having an article accepted or published. So I think there's some concerns, but we've seen a lot more adoption of FundRef. We've seen a lot more adoption of Orchid, and really starting to promote and really getting to the point where they're close to wanting to mandate that as part of their workflow.
All right. Well, Randy Petway at Publishing Technology, your background is in analytics. I think before you went to publishing, you were in finance, yeah. So you know numbers, and that's important to what we're talking about here. Tell us about your perspective on that. When it comes to tracking things, how well are publishers doing it? And to Josh's point, what do they need to be doing to simplify the process?
Yeah, they're doing a reasonable job, but that's not good enough, unfortunately. And that's not a criticism, that's just a reality. I think one big difference with finance is that everything came together that we needed to use before I had to touch it. So that made life simple. But there's so many constituents in the open access model. As we were just saying, there's authors, there's publishers, there's funders, there's the various supply channels. And we talk about standards, and I think standards are critical. But a standard is just a suggestion until someone sees some value in using it. And that's very important. So you have to be able to demonstrate that there's value to each one of those constituents to really get on board in terms of providing the metadata that's needed, making sure that it's clean so that you can ultimately pull it together. Because you can have the best tools in the world, the best ideas in the world. If the underlying data isn't there and correct and connected in the right way, it's not going to be terribly helpful. And you're dependent on a lot of different, as I said, stakeholders to build this information. So the more that people and organizations can see value in getting this all aligned, the easier it will be on the back end to create the reporting, whether that's compliance reporting or whether that's future reporting, what do I do next? Because I look at it from two different perspectives in reporting. There's the what's happened and have I done what I'm supposed to do? That's one perspective you want. But the next one is what do I do next? And that's about knowing what's going on. So you need both sides of that. And again, without the proper data there, without everyone feeling like they have some, that they'll get benefit out of things working together, it'll be very difficult to do.
Right. And so not only looking in the rearview mirror and looking ahead while you're driving, mm-hmm. but you have to think about, what am I going to need to add to all of this? It's not going to be static at all.
No, not at all. I think that one of the challenges is that we don't know what's coming next. Open access has changed over the years. When it first started, you didn't have green and gold. There will be more models. There will be different things that people want to do. Compliance measures will vary from geography to geography. They'll vary from funding type to funding type. So you have to build flexibility into whatever solution you have, because the last thing you want is to have to create a new reporting platform or reporting mechanism for each channel that you're working in or each type of funder that you're working with. That would be unmanageable. So flexibility has to be built in from the start because things are going to change.
Right. This is asking a lot of publishers, though, Randy, and I wonder whether they feel they can afford all of this at a time when budgets are tight and resources are maybe not scant, but certainly being watched very carefully. Is this an opportunity? Is this a revenue opportunity as much as it is a requirement from funders to be in compliance?
I think for a lot of organizations, there is a revenue opportunity there. The previous speaker mentioned Toby Green from the OECD, and I've worked extensively with Toby. And the idea for him and his organization of giving content away and having to find other ways to generate revenue is something they've had to deal with for quite some time. They work in the NGO, IGO space, so there's part of their charter is to be able to service underdeveloped and developing nations. And there's an expectation that you give content to them or that it's cheaper. So the thing is, how can I get other people to pay for things that I'm giving away to some for free? Well, the thing is, they don't sell the content. They provide other services on top of that. If anyone's done any work with standards bodies, for a different reason, there's often an expectation and pirating that goes on with standards, because a lot of people think, well, if the government's making me use it, why should I have to pay for it? So what a lot of standards organizations have realized, we're always going to have a high level of people using, whether we want them to or not, using our content for free. So we have to find other value-added services that we can utilize to generate revenue. So these are things that have been going on elsewhere in groups that are either publishers or kind of tangential to the publishing vertical that I think publishers need to look at and just say, how can we generate other streams of revenue through services? It could be something as simple as discoverability. You provide an enhanced means of discoverability, and you can charge for that. And that's a way to offset some of what's not coming in through your open access journals.
Right. Well, Richard William with Ares, to Randy's point that this is a problem backwards and forwards and developing and growing over time, I think you would agree that this is not about solving any one particular problem, but sort of a multiplicity of problems. It looks like a kaleidoscope, if you will.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. First of all, I'd like to complain that you got me here under false pretenses. You told me that Jake was going to wear a Speedo.
That would be Jake Keller.
Okay. So.
Well, that comes later, actually.
Okay, all right.
Stick around.
If you were to ask the publishers in this room who their customers are, 10 years ago, I suspect most of them would have said libraries. And now, more recently, the light bulb is going off, and it's, you know, our customer is the author, right? And we have to serve the author's need. And I think if we come back to this room in 3 years' time, there'll be another person that they identify as their customer, which is the funding institution. It's a very important constituent for publishers. The STM report a year or so ago reported that there's $1.6 trillion spent on research funding each year. And when you think that scholarly publishing as a whole is a few billion, we are nothing compared with what funders are spending. So if you're a funder, you want to know if your funding spending is effective. And we are the key way that they actually measure their ROI on that $1.6 trillion. So looking at standards is really a way to help them answer that question. Did we get value for money out of $1.6 trillion? Well, the first thing you want to know is actually who did the funding. And so you have ORCID. And then you want to know, well, what did those people actually do? And then you're going to say, well, maybe that's the credit project that lets you say what the individual did. And then you want to say, well, which institute are they from? So you have standards like Ringgold and other institutional identifiers. So standards are really a foundation, but there's much more to be built on that. And they shouldn't be seen as a compliance problem. They should be seen as a tremendous business opportunity for publishers. And, you know, if I was a publisher, I would be jumping on this because I see that $1.6 trillion and I say, I want my piece of that.
And publishers, they have a value, a sort of innate value in the editorial process and the peer review process. But open access exposes the entire workflow, as Josh and Randy were talking, and Agnes too. And so can you tell us about how publishers can better find their place in that and make sure that they're connected to the other parts?
Yeah, and certainly standards is obviously the key way to do that. And you want that ecosystem to be connected, but there are missing components right now. The connective tissue isn't there. So there's an initiative in the UK called Sherpa Fact, where an author can go on, identify their funder, identify their journal, and the system will tell them if that journal is in compliance with that funder's requirements. But it's only for a certain number of funders based in the UK. It's only a certain number of journals. We need that sort of authority file that connects these things to be much more robust and much more comprehensive.
And if I have it right, Ares is beginning to work with players in the so-called pre-submission process, and that's critical as well, because it's only, you know, you're only as good as where you started at, and if you start on the right foot in the pre-submission, then the rest of it should work out better.
Yeah, that's really the flip side of all of this, is the burden on the author. So, you know, publishers are really caught in this trap, which is the funders want more and more data from them, but the authors don't, they just want to send in their manuscript and don't want to be bothered identifying FundRef or other bits of metadata. So how do you make those two tensions come together? And the way you do it is to make it easier for authors is that you connect their authoring environment directly with the submission and peer review environment. So one of the ways to do that is to use another standard, the JAT standard, so that you can directly transfer manuscripts from the environments that authors use to create their manuscripts to the environments where authors are being peer-reviewed. So just today, in fact, Springer announced an arrangement with 20 journals that are using Overleaf to do LaTeX-based manuscript authoring that will transfer directly into journal systems that ingest those manuscripts using JATS and the EM ingest service that you mentioned.
Right. And so as you say about the size, the relative size of publishing to funders, they really have to recognize how critical they are to their continuing business.
I think, you know, it's a tremendous opportunity for publishers. It's really out there to all to be had. But we have to keep our eye on that ball, which is funders want to know what the ROI is on the investment that they're making. How can we help them do that?
Right, I think that's a great point to continue our discussion in the town meeting at 10 o'clock to look at ROI in all of this, because as it's become apparent, there's a great deal of investment that's got to be made by publishers and funders as well to make this all work, and people are going to need to see ROI, not just in numbers, but as well in terms of, as you said, influence and impact. All right, well, thank you to our panel.